You're listening to At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast, where we take a look at the story behind some of the biggest trends and themes in fixed income, currency, and commodity markets today. I'm your host, Jay Barry, co-head of U.S. Rate Strategy and U.S. Government Bond Strategist at JP Morgan. The second quarter has opened in dramatic fashion as Treasury yields have continued to rise this week, with long-end yields now 20 basis points higher and really sitting at their highest level since Thanksgiving now, amid further signs of a recovery in the manufacturing sector earlier this week, and then broad strength in the labor markets today following what was a uniformly strong March employment report. Meanwhile, at the front end, there's been some volatility in the rates complex away from Fed expectations. SOFR rose 4 basis points into and around quarter end, but it has since normalized. What's more, the April 15th individual income tax filing deadline is just 10 days away, and T-bill issuance has turned negative over the last 2 weeks. This is certainly a typical seasonal pattern, but we haven't seen more than a week of negative issuance since the debt ceiling was dealt with at the beginning of last summer. There's been negative $60 billion of net issuance over the last 2 weeks, and we envision another negative $100 billion in net issuance in the coming weeks. So to dig into what's going on at the front end and the long end, I'm joined today by my colleague, Teresa Ho, who's head of U.S. Short Duration Strategy. Teresa, thanks for joining today.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
So let's just dig right in right here. I know it's tempting to get into the rate moves in the wake of today's employment report, but I'd also like to focus on the front end because I think there's a lot happening there that's really interesting to talk about. First, I'd like to ask you, what do you think the rationale behind the moves in SOFR have been this week? There were certainly similar increases in early December and then around year end, but the magnitudes were much larger then. So what can we attribute this to?
Well, as you noted earlier, Jay, it was quarter end this past week, and it's not uncommon to see SOFR rise around quarter ends as dealers pull back their balance sheets for regulatory purposes. On Monday, the day after quarter end, we also saw about $125 billion of net Treasury coupon supply settle. So that certainly contributed to some of the upper pressure to SOFR. But now that Mark Carter end has passed and the markets have largely digested the supply, SOFR has since normalized to 532 as of today, which is exactly what we expected. So, you know, what we saw in SOFR this past week is really nothing out of the ordinary. And it's expected to kind of perform the behavior, you know, around these quarter end dates.
All right. So nothing to be alarmed with there. But as a follow, there's a lot of focus on the upcoming tax date, which, again, is just 10 days away. And now you and I have been talking for some time how we know this tax season is likely to be strong. The labor markets were tight last year. And then add on top of that, the strongest kind of performance for, say, a 60-40 portfolio that we've seen in some time. It means that there should be a strong rebound in capital gains tax receipts as well. So this is naturally going to flow through to money markets. And we talked about the negative net T-bill issuance we're seeing this month and this quarter. And that's going to help the TGA come down in advance of the surge of tax receipts around April 15th. But with this surge, we think it's likely that TGA will rise about $200 billion in the coming weeks. And this has got real ramifications for Fed liabilities. So can you tell me how you're thinking about tax payments? One, how are they going to be funded? Will they come out of money market funds or bank deposits? And then two, what are the ramifications for the Fed's balance sheet? You've done work around this and what to expect. You know, what do you think is going to happen with RRP? What do you think is going to happen with reserves? And what are the risks around this?
Yeah, the tax season is certainly something we're watching closely because it does have ramifications for the Fed's balance sheet, both in the near term as well as in the longer term as we think about the runway for QT. And as you said, this could be a particularly strong tax receipt year, resembling something like what we saw in 2022. And so we went back in time and looked at the flows for money funds and reserves to get a sense of the magnitude as corporates and individuals drew down on their money funds and bank deposits to fund for their tax payments. And what we found in 2022 is that balances in money funds went down by about $140 billion and reserves went down by about $460 billion. Now, why does that matter? Well, this matters in the context of where we are in the QT cycle and where the lowest comfortable level of reserves is. As of this past Wednesday, reserve balances were still sitting at $3.5 trillion. But if flows are going to be anything close to what we saw in 2022, that means reserves could fall to around $3 trillion or $3.1 trillion in mid-April, which is a pretty large liquidity drain in a very short period of time. And perhaps more importantly, getting close to where the markets think the lowest comfortable level of reserves is. And if anything, you know, I think there might be a slight risk that we see more flows out of deposits than money funds and by extension RRP, just because of the interest rate environment that we are in. Money funds are yielding 5%, while most deposits are yielding significantly less than that. So given the choice, as a taxpayer, you might want to fund your tax payments with the latter. So, you know, this is something we're watching closely, as we could see a large drop in reserve balances in the coming weeks. And certainly, like you said, it does have ramifications for the Fed's balance sheet in the short run as well as in the longer run.
No, thanks for that. So in that case, then, if this more closely resembles what we saw in 2022 and a larger drop in reserves, what do you think the ramifications are for the money markets complex, so for SOFR and Fed funds? And then the follow-on there is, would this run the risk of repeating what happened in September of 2019? And now, you know, I'm not a tinfoil hat person, but after today's earthquake and then the solar eclipse that's coming on Monday, you know, could this be the third sign that the end of times are near?
I don't think it's anything quite as dramatic. You know, large liquidity drains in the money markets usually result in upper pressure on SOFR and Fed funds. So, you know, that's to be expected. But certainly, I don't expect this to be a repeat of September 2019. More bluntly, I don't expect this to be, you know, any sort of funding crisis for a variety of reasons. I think first, there is still a positive balance at the overnight RRP facility, which can take advantage of any dislocations in the funding markets. Second, you know, there is still the standing repo facility, and it's available for eligible counterparties to source liquidity should they need it. And so this should provide a soft ceiling for repo rates. Third, I think so far this tax season has been pretty well telegraphed, and the recent stickiness of reserves, despite RRP levels stagnating somewhat over the past month, tells me that perhaps banks are, you know, probably already preparing for it. So, you know, it wouldn't be such a sudden shock to the system if reserves did, you know, come out in larger size, similar to what we saw in 2022. And fourth, you know, just in general, I think there is just still a lot of liquidity in the markets. Certainly a lot of it is parked in the front end. And I think market participants are, you know, ready to take advantage of any dislocations that they may see, hence limiting just how high SOFR and Fed funds could go.
Yeah, that all makes sense. So it's likely that this is going to be pretty contained, all equal, even if we recognize kind of the most extreme scenario in which the reserve drawdown looks like what happened 2 years ago. But what do you think the differences are between 2022 and now? Obviously, you know, bank reserves are lower than they were at the time, and it seems like bank capital constraints might be different as well.
That's right. You know, reserve levels were certainly much higher back then. It was about $200 to $300 billion higher than where we are now. So it was less of a big deal when reserves were running at $3.7 or $3.8 trillion. Also, banks were just much more leverage constrained given the massive size of QE during COVID. So banks were actually happy to see deposits run off. This time around, QT has already removed, you know, $1.5 trillion from the system. Banks have lost deposits. So, you know, there's certainly more sensitivity this time around. But still, even so, you know, I think it's not going to be, you know, a funding crisis that we saw in September 2019. And it should be pretty contained, all else equal. But Jay, that's enough about the front end. I think, you know, the long end is really where the price action has been, you know, as rates made new year-to-date highs this week. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? You know, what do you think has driven this move?
I'm glad you asked that question, Teresa. So I think there's a few things behind what's happened here, and it's certainly been a trend now for the last couple of months. And I think part of it is just this ongoing story that the narrative that persisted to start the year, which was this immaculate disinflation, which would allow the Fed to ease early and often, has certainly been put on the back foot. And some of it started with the strength of the inflation data earlier this year. But look at what happened this week. You got from the manufacturing PMIs sort of further signs that maybe there's a recovery in the manufacturing sector after having been in contractionary territory for the better part of the last couple of years. And then further from that, I mean, today's employment report, it's just hard to find anything weak in it. It's all very supportive of strong growth and strong labor markets. Another upside surprise to payroll growth with revisions higher in the back months. The unemployment rate being revised modestly lower in the face of a participation rate that's rising. All kind of indicative of an economy that's really continuing to sort of move along. And I think against the backdrop of the data flow that we've seen, limited as it may have been since the March meeting, it's pretty notable that the Fed speak does not appear as dovish as it did in recent weeks as well. And certainly Chair Powell seems to be sort of sticking with the same tone that he has, which he wants, you know, seemingly thinks that there's reasons to ease soon, but needs to see more evidence that this inflationary process is continuing. But all else equal, you know, strong growth data against the backdrop of financial conditions that are broadly easing, you know, I think this is supportive of somewhat higher yields and a steeper curve here that has gotten us to this point where we now are in aggregate about 50 basis points higher year to date and sitting at the highest level since we saw in Thanksgiving. And further from that, I think the fact that this narrative has been, you know, kind of, you know, turned on its head, so to speak, it meant that investor positioning has shifted pretty aggressively as well. So over the course of the last couple of months, we can see that active, levered, and real money users have shifted their duration exposure from very long to neutral to slightly short as well. So I think this is indicative of market participants embracing a Fed that is likely to be on hold for longer and potentially easing at a shallower pace as well.
Got it. So a more resilient economy, stickier inflation, you know, it seems there are questions in the markets on just how high yields can go. I mean, as you noted earlier, 10-year yields traded above 5% in the fall. You know, do you think the yields can return there? I mean, what are the similarities and differences between then and now?
No, that's a really fair question, one that I've been getting a lot lately too. So I think there's reasons to see similarities versus last fall's episode, but I very firmly believe that the ceiling on yields here is likely to be lower than it was back in October when we traded close to and above 5%. So a few things there. The first is obviously the similarities that we've been continuing to revise growth forecasts higher. And I think we've revised our year ahead growth forecast up by about a percentage point over the last 3 months. And that happened last summer and fall as well. But it's notable that the magnitudes are smaller and it's from kind of higher levels as well. You know, as growth continues to decelerate from what was nearly a 5% quarter back in the third quarter to something closer to 2.5% right now. So it would seem to say maybe from today's data, if there's a directional risk, it could be towards continuing to ratchet growth expectations higher. And you would run the risk of higher yields from current levels, no doubt. But, you know, to the extent that it's at a more moderate pace than last summer, this probably limits how much yields can move higher. Second, long-term inflation expectations have been moving up as well. And to be fair, you know, we think that inflation break-evens are likely to remain well-supported here. On one hand, the risk to our forecast is inflation remains sticky and high. But on the flip side, if you have the immaculate disinflation, the Fed would be cutting rates even without growth weakening. So kind of leave some support here. But we do not envision break-evens revisiting the highs that we saw last fall, particularly because the most recent run-up has been more front-end led than long-end led. So that's something that does leave some near-term bearish skew to yields here, but again, to a lower ceiling. And finally, most important for me is really twofold. One is we're pricing in a less dovish Fed here, and that is certainly bearish for rates. But if you look at where we were last fall, the market was still pricing some probability that the Fed could actually raise rates. While right now, the committee is firmly kind of split between two cuts and three cuts for the year and does believe that policy is in an appropriate place right here. So if the next move is likely to still be an ease, but we're just debating the timing, that's going to be something that limits the move up as well. And then, as a corollary to that, on the fiscal side, last fall, there was intense focus on fiscal sustainability. And it's not like it's magically disappeared right now, because budget deficits are still large and debt to GDP ratios are still quite high. But at that point, you had a catalyst because the Treasury Department had begun a series of open-ended increases to coupon auction sizes, which were large in nature. You know, walk this forward to April and Treasury is basically done right now. Auction sizes are at cruising altitude for the year, and we think it's unlikely anything will change until next year. So while the fiscal story is still there in the background, you need a catalyst and we don't have one. So all in, this tells me there could be near-term risks to yields higher, because of all these factors, but in a more muted fashion. And it's very unlikely that long-term rates will kind of revisit the peak we saw last fall.
Got it. You know, payroll's out of the way. We've clearly got more next week as CPI is due out on Wednesday. You know, what's your outlook for CPI in March? And how are you thinking about nominal treasuries and chips ahead of this data?
Yeah, so one event risk out of the way and up to the next one, as you said. So on inflation, we're looking for headline inflation to rise 0.3. And we're looking for core CPI to rise 0.28% in March, which would be kind of returning to the sort of increases that we were seeing late last year after two, you know, high side 0.3, 0.4 readings the last couple of months. So if that's the case, you know, that might assuage some of the market's worst fears that inflation is beginning to kind of firm up here, particularly because this should take core CPI back to 3.7% on an over a year ago basis. So that's kind of what we're expecting. But what it means for nominals and for tips, you know, overall, given what we just talked about, you know, though we are in an environment where with yields at multi-month highs and actually looking somewhat cheap relative to our fair value framework, you know, there is certainly a case to be made that we are certainly attractive right here. But the bigger risk is that markets are kind of split between two cuts and three for this year. And if the pendulum swings further towards pricing in two, that would certainly leave some bearish risks. So we're kind of being patient on the duration front. We think it's an appropriate environment for earning carry. We've got various iterations of carry kind of in, you know, what we're looking at. And in fact, like that makes the tips market really attractive here because in an inverted yield curve environment, it's kind of hard to be long duration, but we're in a very strongly positive carry period here for inflation and for tips. So the front end of the tips curve looks cheap to us on a break-even basis. The carry is positive. We think it's a carry-seeking environment, you know, so we kind of continue to find value in tips in the five-year sector of the curve as well, even with expecting a somewhat more benign inflation report next week. Well, I mean, I think we've kind of talked about everything that we need to talk about this week, Teresa. We've got a big 10 days ahead of us with inflation again next week and the tax date the week after that. But just wanted to say thanks for the conversation today. And again, thanks to all of our listeners for listening as well. Stay tuned for more episodes of At Any Rate, JP Morgan's Global Research Podcast Series. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please read JP Morgan Research reports related to its contents for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2024, JP Morgan Chase & Company. All rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 5th, 2024.